host, Mari Riesberg. Over the past several years, I've combined my degrees in acting and somatic psychology to share my sustaining creativity techniques with performers. And now I've decided to share it with a bigger audience that includes you. I believe we are all creative, and this podcast is all about that. I'll be interviewing people from all backgrounds, ages, and creativity experiences to share just how creative we all are. Today, I'll be chatting with Gabe Bulkowski, violinist, violist, and owner and operator of Education for Happiness. Please enjoy Gabe Bulkowski. Welcome to the Sustaining Creativity Podcast. Today I am here with Gabe Bulkowski, violinist, violist, and owner and operator of Education for Happiness. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here, Mari.
I am super excited to chat more formally with you about creativity and all of the things that you do. But before we get there, why don't you take a couple of minutes and let our listeners know a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Okay, well, I would primarily describe myself as a musician. I play violin and viola and have played in a number of groups. Currently, I'm playing in a string quartet called the Bayberry String Quartet with my wife and two other lovely people. And I also play in a tango group called the Oblivion Project. And then I spend quite a bit of my time teaching all ages, but primarily young people, violin and viola, and as well as chamber music and collaborative types of work.
That's amazing. And I love the tango connection, and I love all of these pieces. I wonder, because your version of teaching violin and viola is a little bit different than what people may think violin and viola lessons can look like. If you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about that work so people understand a little bit more.
Yes, my teaching is highly influenced by the Suzuki method, but also by Montessori. I would say those are my two main influences, along with Erik Erikson. And the main difference I would say for myself is that when I'm teaching, I'm not necessarily teaching to the skill or necessarily to the creativity. I'm really trying to teach to the developmental stage of the person and to try to understand where they are developmentally and what they may have missed earlier in their life. Mm-hmm. And but without I need to make sure I meet them where they are if they're developmentally forward of, say, their typical age. And so the teaching takes on a much more kind of, I would say, slower approach, with the skill being sort of the benefit of the work rather than the focus of the work.
Nice.
So, yep.
I love the kind of developmental lens of looking at creativity through that, but also kind of looking at musicianship through the developmental component. How did you kind of get into this developmental work?
That's a really good question. I'm not totally sure, to be honest. I started teaching when I was quite young, maybe too young. I was 15 years old and I started teaching. I'm proud to say that the very first person I started teaching is actually now a professional musician, and we're only 7 or 8 years apart, which is that's kind of fun. We still keep in touch, but I think it was more of just an inner quiet knowing that that everyone can learn and be creative. And that the kind of myth of talent and something being like a gift that you're born with, to me, just never rang true. And what I found was that if the student in front of me felt safe and accepted, then there was always another layer that we could put into their music making that would improve their skill. So to me, learning from that developmental lens felt like the most logical way to teach, and certainly for myself, the most logical way to learn. So,
Nice. So
yeah.
now in adulthood, how do you use that developmental piece in your own practicing and your own musicianship?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So to say that as a very young person, I feel that life is sort of, in terms of learning a skill, even just to put it to learning a skill, is sort of a journey from make believe to real. And so if a 3-year-old hands you, they made you an omelet, and it's filled with shells and maybe isn't completely cooked and whatever, there's an instinct as an adult to be able to see that this child feels they actually made you something that's edible. And so there's an instinct to automatically focus on the fact that they did that. And so that speaks to that developmental stage of the joy of doing. Not the joy necessarily of doing something well, but just the
Sure.
joy of doing. And not even necessarily the joy of learning, but the joy of doing. And that as we move from that make-believe stage into our mind develops and we get more closer to reality and being able to see reactions of people and understanding how they experience what we do, that gives rise to the need to learn so that the act of doing is more valuable. And then, we move from there to, really thinking about our relationships with people and how we work and how we collaborate. That's been sort of my journey backwards and forwards. And so for my own creativity, I try to stack those feelings so that I remember as best I can that joy of doing, as well as the joy of learning, as well as the joy of interacting and collaborating. And so it's a practice of going back to that childhood, that inner child, I guess you could maybe to sound cliche, but to really think about and remember and cultivate that joy. So oftentimes it means that I have to kind of set aside quality for a little while I'm working on a thing, and then gradually bring that quality in to sort of stay in touch with that the joy of doing.
I love that. I feel like it speaks to the idea of kind of being an amateur and developing into a professional,
Yes.
and that journey of being okay being a beginner and it not being, it being half baked versus fully baked, and then having that process support the professional musician to emerge. So,
Yes. Yes, and that's the hard part is keeping that joy of doing when you're under the professional pressures is really what can help you with a sustainable professional life. So that's, yeah, important.
Well, this speaks so much to me, and I love all
Oh,
pieces, but
great.
I'm so curious, what does it mean to you to be creative?
Yeah, that's such a broad question, that I I was thinking about it a lot as I was going to be talking to you, that I think for me, creativity is a very what I love about it is maybe the opposite of what most people would say. For me, creativity is about bringing order to the chaos, and finding a way to take what might be random ideas and bring them into a focus through process. And
Nice.
so to me, it's a real fusion of the right brain, which, or at least that way of I'm not familiar with the science of it, but the sort of more chaotic thinking and thoughts that come in sort of a state of motivation, and then bringing that into calm to say, okay, how am I going to synthesize this in a way that's meaningful to another person? And finding processes that serve that,
Nice.
to me, is what makes the whole thing meaningful and useful to my own mind.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love the kind of taking the chaos and bringing it into more pointed process or calm, more calm space. And I love everyone's answers to this
Right. I'm
question.
sure you get like polar opposites of that too,
So
right?
many different
So, yeah.
responses of what it means to be creative for each individual. And I really think you've kind of captured the kind of experience of it as well as what it means. That I don't know, I had a visceral or image come to mind as you were talking about the chaos into the calm. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is visceral, and when it's working well, it feels like an anchor to life, that feeling of taking something that doesn't even necessarily make sense to me, an idea that I'm having, and then taking away everything that doesn't make sense until I have something I can share,
Yeah.
it's very powerful. So
Yeah, you just ta said having an anchor for yourself. I'm curious, like, what is your process of distilling maybe some of the chaos down to that anchor or that clarity?
yeah, it's interesting. Most musicians that most of my colleagues, I'll just, creativity is such a broad topic, but I'll speak to it specifically with my music making. Most of my colleagues, when they approach a piece of music, they do what I call kind of top down process. So they think about the person who wrote the piece, and they think about the conditions that maybe they were in, and they think about the time period, and they think about sort of much very broad ideas about the work, and then slowly they distill it to more kind of my minutiae, I guess you could say. For me, I start from the other direction. I start from myself, and I start with a, and this is daily practice, this feeling of self-acceptance and of being able to come to the work with a feeling of humility and of craft. So I will sort of start with the structure of the work itself without necessarily thinking too much about the emotions behind the work or anything like that. And I build out the work that way. And over time, my sense of the emotion of the work starts to come in. So I allow myself to have sort of a less intimate relationship with the work up front, and then as my time with the piece develops, I start to find how I connect with it emotionally, and then the emotion starts to build from there. So, and then eventually I do want to know more about what the composer was going through, or what might be pertinent to the expression of the work. But it's sort of a reverse from what most of what I think most of my colleagues think about.
Nice.
So yeah, that's been, I had to sort of work that out in my late 20s to realize that that was how I think, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. And discovering that process, it sounds like opened up other opportunities for you within the music or within being a musician. It reminded me of kind of the way actors prepare. You know, some of them are that inside out version and others are the outside in. So taking all the
Yes.
information and bringing it in, or taking it from the inside and bringing it out. So it made a lot of
Yeah.
sense
Oh,
when you
that's
were
good.
describing it.
Yes, acting is a great, you know, I did a lot of theater when I was a young person, and maybe that was what influenced me, was that you read the script first, and you just take it in, and essentially, you know, you at least what I remember doing was memorizing my lines, often before I was thinking, okay, what is the motive of the person who's speaking here? What is their, you know, intention? I had to understand the text first. So, yeah.
Yeah, those different processes. Well, it sounds like you started teaching quite early in your career and life,
Yeah.
but I'm curious, what is your earliest memory of being creative?
Yeah. It was I was probably about 3 years old, and a student of my father's gave me a pair of drumsticks, which you can imagine that my parents were probably not thrilled that I had these two sticks in my hand that were like essentially the size of me. And I took one stick and put it under my chin and took the other stick and started bowing as if I was playing a violin. And I really, you know, I really felt like I was making music, you know, and it had an immediate response from my parents, which was, you know, happiness. And so that was sort of my first maybe direct experience with creativity having an effect on other, like sort of that whole experience of I'm enjoying what I'm doing and it's having an effect on other people that's positive. And so yeah, I think that was probably my earliest memory.
Nice. I
Yeah.
love that you took drumsticks, which are creative in and of themselves, and turned them into something else.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, that's fantastic. Were your parents musicians as well, or have the arts and music always been a part of your life?
My father was an amateur jazz pianist. So there was a lot of different types of music in the house. And my sister started playing, which is probably why I imitated violinist. My sister started playing the cello about a year before I got these drumsticks. And so, you know, I was around all types of music, you know, early on, definitely. It
Nice.
had an effect on me for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
working in the field that you work with and with other musicians and students, I imagine you
come across people who don't believe that they're creative or struggle to find creativity. How would you encourage others to find some creativity in their life?
Yeah, I feel very strongly that creativity often consists of non-creative things. Yeah. And if a person who doesn't think of themselves as creative can realize that that each idea you have can feel mundane, but that if you give yourself time to think about it and to ask yourself even mundane questions about it, that another step will emerge. And in a sense, if you put, two mundane ideas together, you have essentially created something.
Yeah.
And so creativity can come from the most mundane of spaces. And I think people think of creativity as being, like you feel like you're flying, or you feel this sense that like you've reached some other state of awareness. And I think that those sort of high states of creativity are often the results of a lot of, I'm overusing the word, but a lot of mundane ideas.
Yeah.
That, I think maybe could be compared to like a runner's high. That doesn't happen the first time you go running. You have a lot of just sort of trudging through.
Right.
Until you start to, find those spaces over time.
Yeah.
So I do really believe that that everyone has creativity, and that they label it wrong, essentially.
Yeah, I agree. So, we all have creativity. Yeah. I'm curious, what are some of the mundane things that you do that help your creativity stay active?
Yeah, well, this is where the program that I run has become so important. For example, as a violinist, I have to get my violin out every day. And in order to do that, I have to schedule that time every day.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to schedule that time every day, I have to think carefully. See, I'm already about to fall asleep. So boring. But I have to think about my week, and I have to manage my time to make sure that, very specific times, that the instrument comes out, period. Mm-hmm. So, the program that I run with my wife is called Roland. We have 2 to 3 set times per day where we meet with a group of people, online, just, mm-hmm. It's a scheduled time. It's an accountability that you show mm-hmm. up. And that, in a sense, is the biggest effort, is to actually be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels essentially like the least creative part of creativity is showing up, least creative and most important.
Yeah.
So, that's maybe a good example of, probably the least interesting part of the process is showing up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, the most important, right?
Yeah.
Least
interesting and most important. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Well, it's been such a treat to hear your journey of creativity and all the things that show up for you. I just have one last question.
Yes.
What does it feel like in your body to be creative?
When it all comes together, it takes time. There's a feeling of, I don't know that I've ever used this word, but communion. I feel connected to the people I'm playing with,
mm-hmm.
in a way that goes beyond words. And I feel connected often to the composer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel connected to my own heart, and I feel connected to the audience. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, when all three of those happen, I'm being moved by my own creativity, I'm sensing that I'm moving other people. And then the third thing, which is, I think, the hardest, I'm being moved by someone else. And when it all comes together, it's quite heavenly. Yeah.
I love that. I love the three different pieces and the connection and how that manifests in your physical body and what that is. So thank you for sharing all of those pieces.
My pleasure. You're so good at these interviews. Wow. That was so easy for me.
Thank you. I'm so glad. If people want to learn more about the work that you do, how could they go about learning more?
I have a website called educationforhappiness.org. And we also have a website called rollinpractice.com, which is where you can learn about how we help people sustain a daily practice, with a preset process that we help them to use. So
nice. Well, I'll put those links in show notes so people have easy access. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. It has been such a delight.
For me too. Thank you. I'm so happy to meet you and to get to talk to each other.
Me too. Well, thank you again.
Thanks for listening to the Sustaining Creativity Podcast. We'd love to keep in touch, so follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We are at Sustaining Creativity. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Tag your friends and family so they can listen too. We love to hear from you, so leave your reviews, comments, and questions. Check out our website, sustainingcreativity.com, for upcoming offerings and creativity coaching. Tune in Tuesdays for our next episode. And remember, with creativity, anything's possible.